to again, you dim squirrels. It is my joy and pleasure to present to you our guest speaker. He is well known as a lecturer and author, and among other things, has written the book, Why Not Try God? And last year, First Questions on the Life of the Spirit. It is my pleasure to present to you Tom Powell.
My name is Tom Powers. I'm an alcoholic. It's a good thing to have an alcoholic in an Al-Anon meeting because, you know, we are the people who make Al-Anon possible. That's a horrid thought, isn't it, to start with? Several hundred years ago, it was predicted that a time would come when Almighty God would use the off-scouring and rubbish of the earth to confound the wisdom of this world and to bring help to the otherwise helpless. And I think we're living in the time of the fulfillment of that prediction. Off-scouring and rubbish is something that's about ready to be thrown out. And this is what the alcoholic population is. It's the section of the population which has lost its guts and lost its nerve and grasped this socially acceptable painkiller and is drowning itself in the painkiller and killing itself with the painkiller, body, soul, mind, heart, guts, bones, glands. And this is the section of the population that is being saved by nothing else than the power of Almighty God. I almost didn't get in on the act because I couldn't believe this. I got floating around with the off-scouring and rubbish real fancy. And when I got rubbishy enough to begin bouncing in and out of nut houses, and when I was pronounced incurable, and when at last I was brought in contact with the power which could help me, and they told me what it was, I didn't believe it. I didn't believe it. I knew it was straightening out drunks. I could see that. And by golly, it straightened me out. I, who had been unable by any means to get sober and stay sober with a lot of the best kind of medical help, with all kinds of understanding at home and from employers and from everybody else, who had been obsessively tied to this killing habit of destructive drinking, I was released by Alcoholics Anonymous from this obsession. And I still didn't believe what it was. And after 8 or 9 or 10 months, I still didn't believe it was what they said it was. The power of God doing this. And as a direct result of failing to receive the simple explanation of what this was, I traded in my active membership for an associate membership. Thank you very much, Barbara. That's a priceless term. And I was an associate member for 4 long years. And I recommend any kind of alcoholism in preference to associate membership in Alcoholics Anonymous. It takes all the fun out of the alcoholism. It compounds the misery. It puts everybody in sight wise to what you're up to. And you are left around off scouring and rubbishing with no place to land at all. Al-Anon and Alcoholics Anonymous, this is my personal opinion. If you don't like it, sue me. In my book, Alcoholics Anonymous and the Al-Anon family groups are one movement. This is my way of looking at it. I am compelled to look at it this way by the logic of the situation, not through any peculiarities of my own. It just seems to me so clearly one movement. The central misery around which this thing gathers, the misery which is the mercy of God hidden in disguise. The disease alcoholism makes ill not only the victim, not only the alcoholic himself, it makes ill his entire family. And it seems to me beautifully logical and kind of inevitable that the power which heals the alcoholic, the sick alcoholic, also heals his sick family. Thank God that it is not two power, it is one power. This seems to me logical. It seems to me, however, strange and wonderful that not only does the same power heal both the alcoholic and the alcoholic family, but the same program heals both, with nothing but the change of a word. The same principle, not some of them, all of them. So when I speak of the movement, I mean both movements. For in my view, they are one. And when I speak of the program, I'm talking of my program and your program, if you are a member of that one, because it is indeed the same program, thank God. The disease cuts deep. The healing has to cut deep. Anything which cuts so deep is apt to cut right across a family, unless the family is one in this process. Thank God, it heals not only the alcoholic, the sick alcoholic, but the sick wife, the sick husband, the sick kids. In 1936, AA group number one was in its first year, completing its first year in Akron, Ohio. This amazing phenomenon in which nobody else, God Almighty, was to step into a desperately sick human situation and provide help where nothing else would or could. This thing was in its first year. There was a small, can you imagine what it was like? Nothing like today. No thousands of successful case histories, no program all ironed out, no world services all set up, just a little group sitting there in Akron, beating it out, principle by principle, talking it over. Was this a fundamental or was it not? Should this be included among the things that one did in this process or not? Just the very early part of it, the first beginning, 1936. I was 40 miles away at the time. And I never had any notion at all that it was going on. I was in Cleveland. I was 25 years old. And I was studying to be an alcoholic. While the dear God was preparing my salvation, only just 40 miles away, only 15 miles away from where I went to play golf on weekends at Hudson and get really gay. It never occurred to me for a long time in my drinking that I was headed for disease. I knew that people who drank got into trouble, and I quite expected trouble, and I felt quite capable of handling it when it came. I knew that people got drunk and fell down and did semi-disastrous things, but if you were agile mentally and had the right friends, you could see your way through all of this, and it added a good deal of spice to the game. There was no danger that I saw in my horizon in 1936, 40 miles away from AA group number one, that looked anything like what it turned out to be. And I think as this disease unfolded in me, it's a nice word, isn't it, for a degenerate process to unfold, as this disease exploded, as this thing began to corrupt and tear me apart, I think my chief underlying mood was one of amazement. I kept thinking, hey, how did this come about, you know? I drank the way all alcoholics drink. I drank for reasons of profound personal soul sickness. I drank, first of all, to have fun, but in the course of having fun, I discovered that this stuff would kill what to me was the almost unremitting pain of ordinary living. Chiefly, the pain was nothing dramatic. It consisted largely of an underlying fear, which was more nagging than acute, and a rather sharp and nasty boredom. People looked hideous to me. I could see no sense in anything. Of course, I was an atheist. Everybody with any brains is an atheist, isn't he? All of this God rubbish doesn't make any sense. Nothing else did. I used to get nervous once in a while. I'd look around and see all these planes and trains and automobiles, and I thought, gee, I wonder if anybody knows anything about this. Where is it all going? I felt incompetent to deal with it. Normally. But when properly anointed with the anodyne, with the painkiller, all of this was changed. These rough edges were smooth. And the real powers emerged. Not a bad guy. Too bad I had to poison myself to let him out. And he likes people, and he wants to have a good time. He talks too much, but that's an amiable fault. And powers was let out of the trap of normal life for a couple of hours every day, and it was swell. Except the price of letting out the man who still had some faith and joy in life increased. At first it would cost 6 or 8 or 10 drinks, and out he would come, shining and ready for fun. A couple of years later it would cost 15 or 18 drinks. And by the time 1936 had passed into 37 and 7 into 8 and 9 into 40, and I was down in New York, and a child was born to us, and I had some real things to worry about in addition to my fabricated worries and groundless, rootless fears. I had some that were both grounded and rooted. The price of letting out the man who was capable of a little joy was about a quart of booze a day. This was not to get drunk on. I got drunk weekends. This was just living drinking, rumming drinking, you know? And then the heavy illness swept in, and I went from the stage of being a hawkish, everyday, heavily slopped-up person with a facade of normality and the capacity to handle a job to a man who began to undergo, one after another, a series of crippling blows in the area of the ability just to function in the role in which I was cast in life, which is simply the role of a person responsible for paying the bills in a family and carrying out the functions of a father in a family. This father bit was a great mystery because I was good and sick by the time it came around, and so was my wife. And I looked at this little job that had been deposited in our midst, this little 8 or 9 pound human being. I thought, oh, God, there ought to be some better way of getting them in here, you know? Such a helpless, twisted up thing. And in 1940, I hit my first bug house. It was the first of a series of experiences which I think are important in alcoholism, both for those important to know about in alcoholism, take note of, both for those of us who are alcoholics, either in the active state or in, thank God, the recovered state where we're trying to help others, or the family of alcoholics. This disease proceeds, although the details are very different, it proceeds by a well-marked pattern. It proceeds by a movement which is slow and steady downhill, which nothing, it seems, can possibly arrest or stop. No appeals to the humanity of the person, no threats, no circumstances can alter the movement of this walking death. But then there occur different types of experience right in the midst of this, which I would call alcoholic crisis. Something happens sharply to disturb the steady downward course. Maybe the guy racks up a car. Maybe he winds up in jail. Maybe he kills somebody. We don't know. The details are different. For me, the first of these crises was winding up in the bug house. Not in the drying out part, but in the bug part of the bug house. It had an arresting effect, literally. Temporarily, it paralyzed my capacity to lie. I think this is the chief value of the alcoholic crisis. It's dangerous. People get hurt in alcoholic crises. The alcoholic himself may get hurt, and others may get hurt. The crisis is not an unmixed blessing, but it does carry within itself this blessing that it tends, if it's a sharp one, to paralyze the defenses, to immobilize the alcoholic's finely developed capacity to deceive himself and others. Everything depends then on whether or not, in such an opportunity, the alcoholic, at that moment, comes into contact with real knowledge and real power. And in this first crisis, I didn't have that kind of luck. I went through the crisis. I was treated very nicely. I was given such medical help as was available. It was very good for me. I thank God for it. It gave me my physical balance back, but I did not encounter anything remotely like real knowledge. And by real knowledge, I mean just what you find in AA. It may exist outside AA. I don't say it doesn't. My experience of it is confined almost exclusively to AA. In the first crisis, I missed it. And I went out of the bughouse, determined not to drink again. And a little while later, I was drinking again. And a year later, I was back in the nuthouse again. And this time, the treatment was more drastic, because what this stuff did to me was make me crazy. It didn't just upset me or give me a bad stomach or a coated tongue. It drove me nuts. And when I wound up in there for the second time, again I was shocked, arrested, knocked out of my routine of lying to myself, and this time I had an immense stroke of good fortune. And through the good offices of a doctor, a medical man, a man who confessed to me that he himself did not have effective knowledge, but he knew some people who did. Think of that. A man humble enough, a man of the healing profession, to confess to me that he and his art could not help me. But I had the immense good fortune to be steered by this man into my first contact with Alcoholics Anonymous. And I have told you how I reacted to it. I was picked up by it. I was picked up by the power of it. I was picked up by the authority of it. Because although you hear words here and you see people here and they have something to do with it, the main thing is that there is power. There is something which produces results. There is authority here, if you will open yourself to it. And I was desperate, and I was horrified at the turn my life had taken, and I opened myself to it, and it took me. And it began to heal me. And it began to give me precisely what it says it will. It says it will give you... It is understood that it will cure an alcoholic, that it will give you sobriety. It says in the program specifically, not that it will make you happy, or that it will enable you to make money, or that it will give you an easy life. It says specifically it will give you your sanity back. And what is sanity for an alcoholic? It is sanity, if you are an alcoholic, to say no to that drink. And it is insanity to take the drink. It is that simple. And the first sign that this power, which I would not acknowledge even though it began to work on me, the first sign that this power is delivering is that the man, the alcoholic, who insanely, against every kind of inducement, would take this drink, could not say no, drink it. Now this man is able, when no other power could enable him to do this, now he is able, when the drink turns up, to utter the crucial word, no. This happened to me. Week after week after week, when the idea of came, I said what I had been unable to say before. No. And I began to be what I had not been as a free man outside of a bookhouse. I had not been for many long years. I began to be sober. And after 6 or 7 or 8 months, the second thing that this program specifically says it will do for you began to happen to me. I begin to experience states of utterly normal, average, everyday consciousness that had a different quality than any I could remember except when I was a very small child. Ordinary things just begin to look different. Smells begin to take on a new intensity, wet leaves, the look of little children on the street. Ordinary life begins to change in a very wonderful way. I know now what that was. I didn't acknowledge at the time what it was. I know now I was beginning to wake up spiritually. But I drank again because from the beginning I had retained my atheism. I would have nothing to do with the parts of this program which speak of a higher power. And if you take that attitude, you cut the core right out of this apple. Because they begin to talk about the higher power explicitly. In the second step, they're talking openly about it in the third step, and it goes right on through until you get to the last part of the 12th step. And I am still amazed that the power and the authority of this program kept me sober as long as it did, with my reaction being that hedged around, that reserve, that incomplete, that unsurrendered. Finally, the unsurrender and the incompleteness degenerated into associate membership. I walked off this program. I make no judgment or comment on anybody else's slip. I just report to you that for myself, I don't think anybody falls off this dock. You got to jump a little bit. And when I drank again, I drank not under paralysis, hypnosis, compulsion, or anything else. I drank just in normal consciousness, picking up the drink and tipping it down, thinking I knew what I was doing. And it took me 4 years of associate membership, which is a polite name for hell. Because to get off this program and then to come back looking for more of it and find you can't have it. Very strange piece of business. But again, the mercy of God is built all through it. And the disease which is squeezing the life out of the man, finally, if he will consent, there is some kind of a thing swinging around in there, consenting or not consenting. But if there is enough consent, in the end, before the disease squeezes the life out, it squeezes the arrogance out. And that is the only bolt on the door of the heart. The only bolt. And it swings open a crack, and the life flows in again. Membership is restored. In the 14 years that have now passed since my membership was renewed, since I a second time became a member, since I came to realize from experience that membership in AA is for an alcoholic what membership in the body is for a hand. It's life. It's life for an alcoholic to share the circulation of this thing that goes on here. If the circulation of life and love in AA is moving in an alcoholic, if he is a member, he lives. And if he is dismembered, he becomes like any dismembered thing, a kind of horror. But if the person will hang on And it's the only word of comfort or hope I have to give to anybody who may be making this kind of an experiment. The gift is always there, and it's just as good as it ever was. In the 14 years since that happened to me, I have undergone the further, totally unexpected experience of seeing this thing spread out, this power, this program, and affect not only my life intimately and directly, but the lives of the members of my family. I have lived through, in my own family, 14 years of Alan. I am as beholden to Alan as I am to Alcoholics Anonymous, as to the same power, the same program, the same blessing. I'm extremely grateful that these members who are not themselves alcoholics have come together in their own way to handle their own particular problems. It could be done in no other way, just as in the real clutch of alcoholism, it does take another alcoholic to understand an alcoholic. So I should think, and from what I see, I believe it to be true, in the real clutch of the terror of attending an alcoholic, it must take another one. Not an alcoholic, but another one who has swept through this nightmare of attending a person who is sick in the body and sick in the mind and sick in the soul, and whose sores are running at all sources, and who is polluting the very air they breathe. When you walk into a house where an alcoholic is being active and you come out, it's like that. The air is full of it. And you people who live in it, I think very often, have as hard or a harder time than those of us who have got our persons directly immersed in it. There is a great temptation to speak beyond Alcoholics Anonymous and beyond Alan, and to say what a tremendous thing it is on this earth at this time that there should be so clear a demonstration in a context where it cannot be misunderstood, where it cannot be explained away by fancy theories or fancy words, that there should be so clear a demonstration of the entry, I will not say the intrusion, of the entry of the power of God Almighty into the affairs of men. What an exciting and promising and tremendous thing it must be for others who are not directly involved, but other people struggling with the problems that have descended upon humanity. And our friends tell us that it is so. And yet one of the great lessons of AA is first things first, and shoemaker stick to your last. And to me, the great, great power of Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon is its power again and again to draw one into first principles and to be renewed again. It is no more monotonous than breathing. You keep taking breath in, but it's not monotonous. Each new breath renews the life of the body. And so these meetings as they go on, and these first principles as one is again and again brought back to them. You can soar up on the mountaintop if you want, but if you are active in AA or in Al-Anon, again and again, by a wisdom which I do not think could possibly be human. It is so powerful. It is so simple. By a wisdom greater than human, we are drawn to renew our lives in these great first principles of honesty. God, if someone were to tell me, were to have told me what honesty was to mean in my life, honesty is a never-ending source of strength and of wonder, the daily attempt to live honestly, to face truth, to do again and again and again what I found the little feeble courage to do on that first day in AA, and to do it with my family, with friends, not only in AA, but in LA. The power of that first principle to give meaning and depth and stability to life is something beyond my power to pay tribute to. And then the principle, and not many people live in this principle, not really, not from the heart, the principle of every day, believing that there is something around, that there is a power present which hears when one speaks to it. And that this is the power which keeps the stars in their courses. This is AA. This is the guts of it. This is why it works. And then, because this is a tremendous thing, and it only comes a little bit at a time as one lives it, then to find somehow the courage to make a decision to give up one's life to this and say, yes, I believe maybe there is such a thing around, such a being, and I will give the direction of my life to this. And then the further principle of examining one's life in the light of this truth and facing up to it, taking inventory, and permitting the power to clean up one's life. It will do this if you permit it, giving your consent to it, saying, all right, go ahead. Clean me up, if you will, and keep me clean. Inventory, restitution, re-inventory, and then on in deep, day after day, this amazing 11th step, conscious contact. God, what an inspired two words. Conscious contact. Not just faith, not just hope. And it is that. It is conscious contact. One works to improve it. And then finally, the glory and the joy and the down-to-earth laughter and human fulfillment. Passing on such a gift as this to others who are not just hungry for it, but who are dying for need of it.